Thank you very much, all three of you, for this pretty good illustration of what the concrete challenges, or some of the concrete challenges in Ukrainian media are. And I believe we have about 20 minutes to hear some comments and questions and maybe some proposals for solving these challenges. So the floor is open. Please make your comments or questions.
Nastya, thank you very much for your very good presentation. I just would like to better understand, right? You call it media transparency, but the subject actually you have been covering, so it is about, I would say, professionalism in information presenting. Whether it's balanced information, whether it's verified information, whether it's timely information, etc. So, I saw explanation why transparency, etc. Could you like provide extra arguments? Because usually transparency is used, maybe it's a legal term, is used for ownership transparency, where audience should know who owns what, etc. Please, thank you.
Thank you. This is actually a difficult question because it's always addressed to me when I have the conferences on that topic. The word of transparency is very broad. That's why I started from the definition, how it goes from Latin language, you know, what transparency means. It's the visibility of motion and of information. And that's why it also includes ownership transparency. But in that case, and I use the concept of media transparency, a normative concept, which was elaborated by specific people and scholars, and which is practiced in one American school inside, and I'm working in that framework actually. I can agree that probably this problem could be addressed in broader context, but in my research I address transparency and non-transparency as presence or absence of any influences on the decision-making process of journalists or media about the topic of coverage or tonality of coverage. Is there any influences and how the decision about the coverage is made? Owners are also a very important stakeholders in this, you know, practices as well, because if the owner presses editorial policy somehow, this is an example of inter-organization level of non-transparency, which is also explained. But in our concept, in this concept which I practice, the flow of information is important. How information goes from sources, how it comes to journalists, and is journalists really independent during the making of the decision about what topic of to cover. So ownership also is included here, but it's one of the parts of this, you know, decision-making process and flow of information.
Maybe I just may add another thought with regard to transparency. I think what is really is necessary is the transparency of the motivation of the actor, of the journalist as actor. I don't think there are journalists that are not motivated or that are not depending on external information. No journalist is an island living without external influences. It never can be that way. The only thing the public wants to know is what is his external resource of information and what is his motivation for action. And I also believe it's quite correct if a journalist only has, let's say, peculiar or financial motivations for his work. If he just freely says, I want to entertain people and I want to have a large audience share and I want to do popular content where I can make money with, that's okay. What not is it okay to say, I'm obliged to public interest, but really wants maybe do his political job or fulfill his political targets or just want to act commercially. So we need transparency with the motivation of the journalists. And that can be a commercial motivation, it can be a public obligation, or it also can be political motivation. All three models are okay, all should occur in society, I believe, but we should know what, in the concrete case, is his motivation.
I will probably just a short comment, agree with you, and add during the focus group discussions which I have conducted last year, journalists almost never posed the concept of audience in their narratives, you know, when they were talking about non-transparent practices and different ways of influences which they experience. They never actually think about what audience is really getting as a result. So I plan to describe it in my analysis later on when I will make my dissertation and other papers. But this is exactly a problem that, people are not practicing journalists. They're really not thinking about audience and what kind of information audience gets. Talking about transparency, they speak about ownership, about other questions, but not about the people who actually the main target of the job, of their job.
No. Yeah, I just wanted to add, maybe in order to avoid those questions, maybe you should just add transparency or motivation in media or something like that to pay focus.
In my dissertation, I call it like transparency through journalist interpretation.
Oh, okay.
Through interpretation.
It's different.
I have a question to the last speaker, Daria Taradai. Unfortunately, I don't have a deep imagination about your work, and I have a question about the content of influences. I mean, look at these influences, like not only from Russia to Ukraine, but from Ukraine to Russia, and for instance, exchanges of influences in time, for instance, in perestroika time, because it was very special, very interesting situation, and the Russian media were leaders in the Soviet Union, leaders of different changes, progressive changes in. What do you think about this? Your speech is under the title of the third part of our conference, Challenges of the Ukrainian Media Landscape. It means that influence of the Russian media is something dangerous, but how about another ways of influences from Ukraine to Russia, and for instance, especially it's very interesting for me in perestroika time previously. Yeah.
Thank you for your question, but the biggest problem probably is that the topic of my general research interest is not the, for example, Russian influences or other influence. This is like the second, the additional my interest that I started to research few months ago to prepare some paper to give some idea about the Ukrainian media system. I thought what would be interesting for the people from other countries. What would the if they are ready to discuss the question of establishing in Ukraine public broadcasting public broadcasting, then what I think would be important for them to know about Ukrainian media system. But just to give the clear idea of my research interest, my PhD project is about the coverage of international conflicts by Ukrainian TV news, and I'm interested in the process of news localizations and domestication in Ukraine. And the case study of my research is the coverage of the 2008 South Ossetia War. But I think that this very important question of this Russian influence, and I think that it should be in the part of challenges, because we cannot find any other country that's influenced in such a big way on Ukraine as Russia. So I think it can be potentially at least as a challenge or danger or some threat. And it's a question how to oppose it. Maybe we need not to go to Russia and say you are bad, you are trying to influence us. maybe it's a problem of our journalist, and in all these possible factors I've tried to concentrate on this question. But I think that probably I will also try to continue the research in this sphere, because I think to make some deeper conclusions, it is necessary to make deeper research to cover the bigger amount of media, bigger periods under investigation, and what is also important to compare the situation now and, for example, during the presidency of Viktor Yushchenko, for Leonid Kuchma, Leonid Kravchuk, and so on and so on. So in this case, yeah, thank you for your remarks, and I will take it into
Professor Kleinschreiber also wanted a comment, and may I ask if there are other comments, just to be able to plan for time. You have another comment too? Anybody else?
Yes, thank you. I have a comment to each of the three presenters. First, Ms. Grinko. Well, you based much of your research on American sources. There is no public service broadcasting in the United States. And, of course, we think in Germany about corruption of journalists. Not that this does not exist, of course. Our journalists are not cleaner than those of other countries. So it's a question of mechanism of how to make this difficult. And the public service system, of course, helps to keep journalistic work relatively clean. There's a clear legal basis. They have to be independent. They cannot get money from the outside. And we had several scandals, for example, of product placement or sports journalists who have received money to place certain products in their programming or whatever. They were kicked out. They were punished. Yeah. Things like that have to happen. Also, we have strong journalist organizations that somehow protect journalists from outside influences. We have employee councils in all our public service broadcasting organizations, and journalists can complain there if they feel that there is too much pressure. So it's not that transparency as such is a value, but you have to organize things that make the actual situation of a journalist bearable, so that when he leaves the line of correct behavior, he either can complain when pressures from the outside, when he becomes corrupt, then he has to be punished for that, simply punished. So I think there are situations in public service broadcasting that you do not find in the American example. Yeah? And one of the legacies of public service broadcasting is, in fact, that it is probably less corrupt than other segments of the media system because of many mechanisms. Now, to the second presentation by Ms. Oliver, you were talking about election campaigns. Now, in our public service laws, there are very strict regulations about the activities of the broadcasters during election times. Yeah? Because we know all these problems. Yeah? You call them cash for covering practices and so on. Yeah? So in Germany, during election times, all the parties get a certain time slot, a time window where they can present their point. The large parties more time, the small parties less time, yeah, and there is no other election campaigning possible, not even for money, on public service broadcasting. Again, the feeling is manipulations are possible, and politician parties would do it if we don't have regulations, so it is strictly regulated. Another point why we need, you know, first of all, the lawyers will love it, regulations in broadcasting, and secondly, public service really guarantees that these regulations are actually practiced. Third point to Ms. Taradai, I don't know if I pronounced it correctly, whatever. Again, public service. One of the reasons why in Western Europe we maintain public service systems is because we want to have money available for reporting out of national perspectives or national positions or whatever. Yeah. So we have money, for example, available in Germany to maintain one of the largest foreign correspondence networks outside of news agencies, which are mostly British American. So it is to protect our system of news gathering. I will give you another example. When I think of what you say about Ukraine and Russia, I sometimes think about Switzerland and Germany. You know, small Switzerland, Germany, mostly the same language. Television in Switzerland is much controlled by Germany. Radio is totally Swiss. But if you ask Swiss people, why is public service important for you? They will probably say, because it is a space in which national reporting takes place. And we need this much money to be somehow independent from Germany. And I quote Switzerland, because Switzerland is the country in Europe with the highest subscription fee for public broadcasting. And people in Switzerland are prepared to pay that because they know it gives them a certain independence. And in general, in Western Europe, you will see that the smaller countries are prepared to relatively pay more for public broadcasting than people in larger countries because they want to have their national news sources well paid. Yeah? And I don't know, at least this is my reaction to what you say. I mean, the Russian influence seems to be very strong. That's certainly dangerous for Ukraine. But again, in Western Europe, you have the public service system, yeah, to kind of fight off these exterior influences.
Thank you very much for your comments. And I have an honor, or I am lucky, to be related to all these issues that you were talking here about, because besides the fact that I live in Ukraine, I'm working for the public broadcasting service, but unfortunately not Ukraine, but I'm working in BBC Ukrainian, so I know very much the system of the protection of news sources, of all this idea how it should be done. But, you know, maybe this is a remark for the further discussion and the final conclusions, but what made me feel frightened that, you see, every time when our colleagues from Western Europe are giving us some ideas or recommendations how some mechanisms can work in Ukraine, we already have in our minds the idea of what in Ukraine is wrong that will stop these recommendations from working. If we are talking about the Constitutional Court, I think in Ukraine now to tell that Constitutional Court is independent after this last decision on the political reform, it's very special remark. So I'm just afraid that because we have such, you know, in different countries, in different periods of time, they have some peculiarities of their political or social or cultural situation. But now I have an idea that in Ukraine we have so many different peculiarities in all spheres, and I'm just really afraid that they will stop from functioning any, like, the most brilliant idea. Thank you.
Before I hand on the microphone, just a small comment on what Professor Kleinschreiber mentioned. The one thing we have is an explicit allocation of time for the different political parties during or before elections. And as was mentioned, the large parties or the party with large number of votes have, of course, more time allocated than the small ones, which also, by the way, is criticized by some who say that stabilizes the status quo, and the opposite parties or the small parties should be allocated over proportional amount of the time. The other thing is that besides these explicit time for political spots of the parties, where the parties themselves are responsible, is that, of course, during the program also political issues are raised, and maybe they are even more influential than the explicit spots. And there, as we now have noticed that these are very influential, they start content analyses that try to measure the proportion of, let's say, politicians from the different parties that are present discussion, political discussions, or in the news. And then, of course, this is maybe inappropriate, but a very complicated approach, because it's very hard to measure the influence. It's not only the time and the number of people, but also what they have to say and how they said it. If somebody dumb always is present on the screen, that could have counterproductive effect. It's very hard to measure. It just illustrates how important before the elections the mass media have become, and that this is a general problem that you raised here in all countries. Okay, I have two more signals from our ladies, our lawyers, both from Ukraine and from Germany.
I have a small question to Daria. Maybe you should consider in your future if you will be continuing those efforts. You demonstrated example where Russia was involved in the event. I believe that maybe it should be different situation where, for example, to follow whether any influence taking place, to follow whether it's like purely Ukrainian events or Ukrainian-German events, how it is reflected in Russian media or how it is reflected in Russian-founded but present in Ukraine media. Are you having in mind like this angle? Okay, thank you. And then
my question goes in the same direction. I only wanted for my knowledge to know whether how big is the influence of information coming from the Western European part, from other countries? Now, very important, your subject was Russia, Ukraine. But which sources do you have if you work with BBC? You surely have Western possibilities. And how would you, how percentage, 20%, 30% or less, information coming from Western Europe?
In this case, by the way, I also tried to count the materials taken from Western media, but I called them, again, neither Russian nor Ukraine, because I couldn't call them foreign media, and the percentage was very small. And you see, it depends very much on covering which events we are covering and which events we want to talk to the audience about. If we are talking about Ukrainian events, of course, me, is in my job as a BBC correspondent, I use only Ukrainian sources. But if we are talking, for example, about international events, which I also very interested in, because before I worked for one of Ukrainian TV channels at the Department of International Information, and I'm also researching this question much more. So in this case, in Ukraine, the tendency is that the majority of channels, they completely... They use only, yes, the information provided by Reuters. Even not like Reuters and Associated Press and France Press to compare, but just Reuters. And what is maybe the few channels only have the possibility to send their own correspondents abroad. And one of them is Inter channel, which we already mentioned before. And the owner of this Inter channel is Mr. Harashkovsky, who is the head of the Security Service of Ukraine. So it's also a very special coverage of international events.
Yes, I think we should stop here. Some of the questions will be raised in the final discussion, the general ones, I believe, at least. So let me thank all three speakers for the excellent presentations and all discussions for this discussion now. And we have another 15 minutes for the last coffee break today. And then I'm looking forward to the final discussion, which is led by Professor Kleinsteiber. Thank you.